As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi.
Can we use that as the start?
Hello, everybody. It's The Ruck. This is the Times and Sunday Times weekly podcast. Stephen Jones here standing in for Lawrence. Lawrence has got a day of big business meetings today. He's been off with the post of Earth's ambassador on Mars. So he's gone off to the red planet today to discuss it with the Martians. But that's just a small deal by Lawrence's normal standard. So he'll be back in several years to croak at us.
Sounds like he's evolved his excuses from the punctual Tokyo trains not turning up on time.
They're coming on all the time. Fair play to him. Anyway, we'll miss Lawrence today. We'll particularly miss him on the Saracens dispute, speaking as a member of the WASP board. But there was some great rugby on the weekend, and at the end of when the dust had settled on Europe, Exeter, Leinster, and Toulouse were going great guns, and so were Saracens, or at least they were on Saturday against Munster in a fantastic game. It's boiling up nicely in some areas. In some areas in England, it's going down like a lead balloon. We'll come to that shortly. First of all, two of us on the panel were there at Allianz Park on Saturday. I'll just introduce you. Stuart Barnes was there, although in a fairly low-profile role. But we won't go into that because it's too painful.
He's so sensitive. Be nice to him. Oh, you've already got level with Lawrence. You have to have a go at everyone.
All right. Owen Slot was there for some particular reason. Oh, no, sorry. He was reporting it for the Times. So, and Alex Lowe, the man who knows everything, wasn't there because he was taking the day off.
Because he already knew what was going to happen.
Exactly. But he has now read the whole of the Encyclopedia Britannica. And he knows the last paragraph of it as well. So he's read the whole thing. Owen, I know no one else is bothered about this, but we were in magnificent new temporary accommodation at Allianz Park, and we were suspended over the play itself. And in fact, when the fight started, you almost felt that you wanted to go in and join in, didn't you?
Yeah, so just to explain, Allianz Park's being the stand that we normally sit in is being rebuilt. And so there's a temporary stand, there's a temporary press area, and we are literally sort of 5 yards back from the pitch and 15 yards in the air. I mean, not suspended like sort of Harry Potter, like, but we're in a stand 15 yards up, and so you are sitting right over the action. So the fight happened right under our noses. It was a brilliant way to watch the game, but also I haven't seen a game of that quality so close up, where you appreciate so much of the elements of the skill, that you see the physicality and the hits so much, but it's the skill and the decision making, the speed of everything when it's right under your nose like that. It really was electrifying.
It was. Do you know what? We were so close. It made me feel sorry for players sometimes, because Max Malins, who played brilliantly, the young Saracens fly half, who actually played at fullback, when the ball was up in the air at the box kick, and poor old Max is looking up there wondering what to do with half of Munster coming down on him, the coaches on the touchline would shout, "Run it!" before he'd caught it. Other bloody chat. And he did it once, and he ran straight into trouble. So I think there was too much coming on from the touchline. Stuart, let's be fair. Munster have had a lot of problems with Saracens, but they did take them pretty much all the way this time, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. I thought Saracens were nowhere near their best. I thought we saw it was gutsy, it was gritty, it was all those emotional things you expect from Saracens. But I think they were a little bit inaccurate, and because of that, it kept Munster in a game which way when Saracens are at the best doesn't happen. And that's the thing with Munster. If you don't put them away, they will never give up. They have got immense commitment, huge pride, and they, of course, were playing for a lot themselves. If they could have sneaked to win there, it would have put them in a great position to qualify from that pool. As it is now, it's a very, very delicate battle, and Munster are going to have to win in Paris. Otherwise, I think their goose is cooked.
And you have to sort of wonder that, what if? Because they lost Peter Amani before the game started. He pulled a something, didn't he? And Tadhg Burn went off after within 10 minutes or something. I mean, those would be two of their biggest, best forwards. That's quite a big loss.
It changed things considerably because the Munster line-out, I think that they with Amani and Burn there, they were looking to dominate line-outs. They didn't have an out-and-out open side. And within 15 minutes, Tommy O'Donnell was on. But having said that, you know, O'Donnell did really well over the ground. So what Munster may have lost in their plan for set-piece dominance, they gained a lot, because I thought O'Donnell was probably the best scrapper on the floor in that match.
I also think, don't you also think, though, lads, that when you say what if, Munster wouldn't have scored a try had they still been out there now.
No.
And on the other hand, what if Skelton and Barrett and Itoje had been playing? So, you know, I thought they had that well in hand. And great news for England, I thought, was the two Vunipolas came so strongly at the end.
I love sports photography. My favourite rugby picture of the weekend was of Mako in the game. There's a wonderful shot of the melee going on all around him. Players grabbing each other by the collar and steam rising. And Mako's just standing right in the middle of it, taking a swig of water from his bottle. It's absolutely brilliant. You've got to look it up. It's my favourite rugby picture of the weekend. Fantastic.
Let's just clarify that, Alex. We like sports photography. We just don't like photographers. Okay, thanks very much. Yeah. I enjoyed that. We then had Dr. Gate, when a little lad wearing a red woolly hat seemed to approach Jamie George and shout something almost in his face. We found out afterwards he was the head medical man, Mr. Woolly Hat. And Jamie George, I think it would be out wide of the mark to say that Jamie George gave it a really good reception, whatever he said. It then boiled over into what was described as a brawl, but wasn't really. It was a big gathering of people. Owen, let's be fair, it was slightly amusing in a way, but in another way, absolutely ridiculous.
It was ridiculous that it was sparked the way that triggered the way it was, that a medic who should be looking after people should be triggering off potentially the opposite of that. The fight wasn't really a fight. I don't think anyone sort of got remotely bruised or... Sorry, Alex has just shown me the picture of Mako having a drink in the middle of this the Battle of Allianz Park. What I found interesting is you again, when we're sitting right over the game, you can hear a lot of what they're saying to each other, and you hear some of the exchanges between the players, and you're reminded of how they have to the test that they have to keep their cool in order to play a game of high intensity and courage and physicality for 80 minutes. And then it takes just a little trigger of someone from off the side of the pitch and someone just blows like that, especially when it's Jamie George, who we know is a cool, calm and very impressive young athlete. So I don't think anyone believes that the slanderous comment laid at him was just, you're a bit of a fat.
No, there are reports which we can't confirm that it was something more than that. Stuart, on the side of the pitch, when you played, and I know we're going back a long time now, when you played, do you remember the hordes of people being on the touchline, supernumeraries, water people running up and down? Because to be honest, if one thing comes out of this, it'd be nice if they tell everybody else to get back in the ruddy stand where they belong.
Two things there. One, no, the people, the replacements would find a patch to warm up. It wouldn't be within 2 metres of the pitch. They'd be sat down on the touchline at the rec or wherever we played, in the dugout at Welford Road, and they would quietly do a bit of a hamstring stretch here, a neck roll if you were a prop forward there, but they wouldn't be...
A fag here.
When John Palmer was on the bench, plenty of fags. But what they wouldn't be doing is getting off and shouting orders that were emanating down from the coach. And it's the fundamental failure of the professional game. It does not encourage individuals to think for themselves, because your point, Steve, about Max Malins getting someone shouting in his ear, telling him what to do before he's done the essential thing, is the problem. You cannot keep shouting. Rugby isn't a match. It's not American football, where you complete a play, you stop, there's the next play. Rugby is fluid, and the strength of rugby is its fluidity. But when you've got idiots shouting down, when they look over from their computer and have studied the statistics, and they're saying, to the left, to the right, goes down the middle. does not help you as a fly half, as a scrum half, as a number eight, as a decision maker. You want to have a little bit of space in your head to think your thoughts through, to make quick decisions. You don't make quick decisions when the whole world is shouting at you. So I thought what we saw there was actually and not just an indictment of manners on the touchline from the Munster medical team, but it was also an indictment of professionalism. And I think the teams that understand that and get back to players making decisions will be stronger for it.
Alex, before we go back to the actual incident there, but there's that fair enough from Stuart that, first of all, you know, there's too many people screaming, but actually they should leave it to players anyway, never mind where you're sitting or standing.
Yeah, so I've got young boys who are just starting to learn to play sport, and one of the things that you're told when you're coaching kids is don't shout at them while they're trying to play, because it just confuses the matter. They're the ones on the field that they have to make their own mind up. They have to see what they see in front of them. So if you shouldn't do it to kids, I don't think you should be doing it to a professional rugby player who has got the feel of the game on the pitch.
Exactly. There's a great tweet by Gary Street, the former England women's coach on the weekend. Obviously, he'd been at a youngsters match. He said, "Why on earth, throughout the whole game when the opposition had got the ball, are the line of coaches and parents shouting, 'Tackle! Tackle, tackle,' as if they hadn't understood that you've got to tackle the guy who's got the ball." Just going back to, finally, one word on Munster. Munster never slow to come through when there's been an imagined slight or even a real slight against their team. They still think that they lost because of the hand of back in the European final years ago. Reaction to date by the normal Munster fans and even their team to the fact that their Dr. Bonkers ran on and started insulting players, absolutely zip. Let's hope that they are going to take action without ERC, because it's gone crazy if that happens.
Well, the thing that Munster should do is grab this before anyone else makes a decision. I mean, it's sort of lesson one in PR, isn't it? It's like, it's tackle it yourself, say, listen, our man really screwed up and we apologise and we're going to suspend him for a week or a month or maybe just execute him. But you've got to do something like that. Otherwise, you're sitting there just looking foolish.
Incidentally, have you been to talk to you about politics, Bansy?
This is a rugby podcast. can we avoid all things political, gents?
You can have one name. Who would take the place of the triumphant Corbyn in your socialist world? Give us one name. People will be interested.
But let's have a rule here. It's got to come from the world of rugby.
Jess Phillips I like, but I think Rebecca Long-Bailey, related to Mark Bailey, the former England winger, has a more left-wing agenda, which suits me. The world
When we said this person's got to come from the world of rugby, it didn't quite trigger a thought, that, did it?
I'm looking forward to the Times Politics podcast Six Nations preview, though.
Yeah, exactly.
It's going to be a belter as we swap roles.
Get Barnsley, Jess Phillips, Mike Phillips, Leslie Phillips. It'll be brilliant. Alex, just going back to the Heineken Cup, Exeter, probably a little bit quieter than Saracens, but are clearly targeting it. I just want a quick word from you two, but also first from Alex. They're targeting it, they're going well, they could well get a home draw. Have they got that extra class that the likes of Saracens and Leinster have, that extra world class, to take them from, say, losing finalists to triumphant?
I think the signing of Stuart Hogg gives them a world-class player, no question. I think that the strength of Exeter, though, has never been the individual talents of their players, but it's the collective, isn't it? And I think where they have stumbled in recent years in Europe is losing early games at home and the wind is out of the sails. But it feels to me like they have established a confidence that they are going to be up in the top four of the Premiership. Now they're certain of it, and so they feels like they can target Europe perhaps in a way that they weren't able to previously, because they were battling to establish themselves as a front runner.
On another front.
As a front runner in the league, and they won one title and came second twice. It feels now like they're able to slightly shift their focus with the confidence that they will deliver in the league that they've built up over 3 years. They can now target Europe. And they've got match winners. Henry Slade is playing superbly. Jack Knowles, brilliant, and Stuart Hogg, obviously. But for me, it's the collective that they have. So, do they have the players of Leinster and Saracens? One on one, no. but they have something about them which I think could hopefully will take them deeper in the tournament, because it would be really good to see that
happen. Steve, their coaches are revered, but I think you have to say that it's taken Baxter and coaching company quite a while to work out Europe as well. In the Premiership, they're very good at diving off the top, sealing ball, getting away with it, and just playing possession rugby and grinding opposition down. They went to Europe, they played teams like Leinster, who were equally good at that, and they didn't get it. So I think it has to say, admirable as Exeter's coaching has been, they were naive in Europe for a while. They kick more now, and when they attack, they cut with more edge, because, as you say, Alex, Hogg has made a big difference. And, you know, outside centre, Henry Slade oozes class. And why Exeter messed around with him as a 10 and 12 for so long, I'll never know, because it was clear that he needed to be in that wider space. He could be one of the great 13s of the next decade.
Owen, let me give you two teams, probably favourites at the moment, Leinster and Toulouse. God bless Toulouse, because it doesn't feel right unless there's a great French team in it. Leinster, Toulouse are the teams to catch, do you think, in Europe now?
Yeah, I do. I think quite clearly, actually. Leinster, still my favourites. They obviously won 2 years ago, losing finalists last year. They are a team of, they're an international team, proven internationals. They know how to do it. And I still slightly feel that Toulouse are a team that are getting somewhere, going somewhere very fast. But they've got their young players coming through. And in 2 years' time, I think Toulouse will be magnificent. But I mean, that would be a hell of a final, wouldn't it?
Alex, just to come back to England now, because something is what is winding me up a little bit, and that is the England performances.
Oh, that's rare. Sorry, but I mean, it's not unusual, is it?
No.
I didn't mean to knock your fist right there, Stephen. Sorry, you were doing it. It was a good podcast till I messed it up there.
What I was going to say was I'm really, really happy about the way that the England teams are going, except for a few. If two England teams get into the semi-final, that's fine, but Alex, Harlequins v Ulster, they played them in the double header. Mm. We all know, and the world knows, with respect to Ulster, if you can hold them to a decent margin, even of defeat at home, then you can usually see them off. When they're playing at home, you can usually see them off at your ground, in this case, Harlequins. Harlequins picked two really weakish sides when to have got the better of Ulster over two games would have put them right in pole position to challenge. What was that about? And was it about the fear of relegation? Was it about not being able to have your players for more than 30 games? Because I felt slightly devalued, or I would have done had I been a Quins fan.
I don't think it'd be the fear of relegation for Harlequins.
Why not?
Because I don't think they fear getting relegated. You think they do?
I think there's about half a dozen teams at the moment who look so devoid of
understanding. I'm a compare.
Sorry, Steve.
But I don't think that's the drive. I don't think they would have looked at that group and thought they were going to go through. They'd be competing in the latter stages. So therefore, other elements come in, like players who've been to the World Cup have already played so many games. Mm. There's a limit of 30 that these players can play over the course of a season. So they look like Gloucester are the same. You know, I don't think Gloucester are fearing relegation, but they're also pretty aware that they're not going to go very far in the Champions Cup. And so they rotated their team as well and lost over in Connaught. So they're keeping players back, not I think because they fear relegation necessarily, but because they need to rotate these squads.
Can I say something? I know you're the compare, Steve, and it's going well. But
as long as you keep that in mind,
I just wonder. So, but Barnsley wrote about this morning, and I thought he was spot on, as in those English teams are targeting something else. They decided far too early, which is damning on the European Heineken Cup. They've decided far too early that they're not going to compete in that. But I wonder if it's as much or not so much the fear of relegation, though they understandably they could have it, but everyone knows that they could win the bloody Premiership this year, because Saracens aren't going to win it. And the top four is likely to be Exeter, and then who knows? Anyway, I can see the big clubs are at the bottom. Bath have got a good enough squad to, if they actually got their game together, they man for man, on paper, they're as good as the teams at the top. So I think that they could be looking at it more that way. We could achieve something this season, but I don't think they can achieve something in Europe.
Before I come to Stuart, I'll just say that if I was a Gloucester fan, in fact, I am partly a Gloucester fan, the people who went over there to see that one of the great clubs, they went out there to Connaught, which is difficult to get to. They were two scores up with about 6 minutes to go, and they completely collapsed at the end, mainly for the lack of two or three wise heads. Now, that was bad enough, but if I think what we're saying now, and I'm not actually being critical of the teams for this, if we're saying that they just cannot fit in the European Champions Cup, which some of them can't, Stuart, isn't that a really bad thing to say about the season?
Well, I'd say this. We weren't slow north of the Channel to slate the likes of Cast and Borgoan and Agen when they were losing by 50 and 60 points. And teams like Bath right now have joined that category. You know, and what is the point huffing and puffing, celebrating when they get a last-minute score at Leicester to make the Heineken Cup, when after two games they've given up on it? They're treating the tournament with contempt at the moment. They're treating it like a tournament that matters an awful lot less than the Premiership. And whilst in the press today I was being slightly facetious about the relegation, though I do think Harlequins and Bath are capable of going on losing runs that put them right in the mix. I do believe that. The bigger problem really is an overarching cleverness from coaching. And they plot the season and they think, OK, we might get through as a best place runner-up, but we won't beat Toulouse away in a quarter-final, so let's not bother. So you quit on that. And in the process of sort of downgrading your European aspirations, you actually inculcate a club with a sense of negativity. You think, I'm getting used to losing. The great teams are not used to losing. Saracens, you win, you win, you win.
So the Saracens are a team who've rested players because they're having to manage them.
Oh, that's completely different with Saracens, isn't it?
Well, but it's the same issue. But because of the depth of their squad and the way their group is, they're actually still in a very strong position to go through, because they could leave out big name players at home to Munster and still win and get a losing bonus point away from home.
Isn't this all just a reflection of the fact that rugby doesn't work at the moment? The season's too long, they're playing too many games. I mean, Steve, you're right that the fans who went out to Connacht, they should feel pissed off that they didn't get their money's worth or didn't get their team's worth. But there are too many games, and the coaches, I mean, funnily enough, they're all making the same decision. We can't play all our best players all the time. And it's no different to what they do in Ireland. It's just they don't play in the Pro 14, are they?
Absolutely.
So the numbers, last season, Saracens won the double, played 33 games. An England player who plays, say, 10 tests a year can only play 20 of those games for his club. So that's where some of this balancing is coming in. And these clubs have taken a decision. And we're 5 games into the Premiership. So I don't think it's a relegation thing that's the fact, as you mentioned. I think it's more that they've, a lot of these clubs have chosen to attack the league rather than Europe. And that is an indictment on Europe at the moment.
But the difference is, you say they've chosen to attack. I've watched them play in the Premiership and I don't see an awful lot of positive about what they're trying to do. And I think this whole relegation thing, it's not that they think they'll get relegation. It's like there's a horrible sort of misery cloud over the club. And they're thinking, if we go on a losing run, then we could be in the scrap. If clubs like Leicester have been in the scrap, they think we can get in that scrap. And I think a team like Harlequins and Bath, in all honesty, if you went to the soul of that club and you said to the spectators, their fans, are you more likely to win a title or get relegated? They would say, relegated. And because of that, I do believe that there's an element of negativity. And what is the point even bothering with Europe if you just think, unless we can win it, then let's give up? And that's what some of them have done. They've given up.
Well, listening to Mark McCall on the weekend saying, you know, I asked him, look, it must be a heck of a juggle for you. He said, well, it's not. It's okay, really. But then he said, of course, he said, there's only 7 weeks between losing our player, getting our players back from the World Cup, 11 weeks, and then them buzzing off to the Six Nations. 2 weeks' time, they got a midweek England training session where Eddie bashes them like mad. And I'm sorry, I don't care if it's unions going bust. They cannot keep putting this on the clubs. The only way you can get the balance back and allow the clubs to play their players more often is to have fewer internationals. And I don't care if they have to totally redo their finances. They've let them gallop completely out of control, and you've got to go back to 2 internationals in the autumn, 2 on tour, few in the Five Nations. You cannot ever again have 4 World Cup warm-up internationals. The imbalance and all the pressure is coming from the international scene, and something has got to happen because they can't keep on taking the players away from their clubs.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And big news while we're actually in the studio for this podcast, that Rob Howley, the case of Rob Howley infringing the game's rules of betting, has been found guilty. He's been suspended for 18 months, but 9 of those are suspended. So actually, he can come back into the game on the 16th of June 2020. That's because the suspension is also backdated to his initial departure from the World Cup squad. So effectively, Owen, he's got 9 months. Clearly been found guilty of quite a significant offence there. Won't be able to do his job as coach of Italy, but will be back in the summer.
Yeah, I mean, he hadn't been given the Italy job. He was just a front-runner for it, wasn't he? But so I think the interesting thing now is what job, who will employ him next? As you say, he's not going to be the Italy coach, obviously. Will other clubs and national teams feel that he's too tainted to go near? I would hope not.
No.
So where do you think he might end up?
Bath.
That's not such a stupid suggestion.
Well, it's not. I mean, Bath have garnered a healthy relationship, shall we say, with
the Welsh.
West of the Severn.
Yeah.
Robert Howley would be more than happy to be at somewhere like Bath. They pay good money. Bruce Craig likes big name signings. I think a lot of it does depend on exactly the nature of what he's been found guilty of.
Alex, Slotty's basically quite sanguine about the fact that he might come back at the end of his suspension. So, Stuart, I mean, we all know he's a really lovely fella, quite a humble fella, and we also know this has absolutely shattered him. Would you feel as a club employee any problems with bringing him back?
It's a hard question to answer because as we sit here, we haven't seen the full judgment and the full reasons behind how he went down the road he went down.
We also don't know the odds on him getting a job again yet, do we?
Slotty.
Sorry, was that a bad joke?
No, that's gratuitous.
But on the face of it, I wouldn't. The reasons why we don't know yet, but he's made a horrible mistake and he'll have been punished for it. And I think rugby should welcome him back into the game. I think it would be the game would be doing itself a horrible disservice if it locked him out.
Fair enough. That just leads me nicely into another aspect and possibly another destination for him. For our Welsh listeners, this is a big weekend for them. The Dragons play the Scarlets and the Ospreys play the Blues on Saturday. One's at 5:15, the other's at 7:35, I think. And both have been really poor at the moment. The Ospreys appear to be on the verge of falling apart. None of them have really come through strongly. Dragons improving from a tiny base. Scarlets maybe looking fairly decent, or they might even lose their new coach. So one team of those four will certainly welcome Howley, I would have thought, but it's going to be fascinating. Warren Gatland's now gone and the magician's gone. Wayne Pivac has got to really deal only with the raw material he's got, and some of it is not great. So be very interested on the weekend to see those four teams in action.
So from our Howley chat, so Barnsley said I don't know, maybe quite seriously, could Howley go to Bath? I mean, Bath certainly needs someone. Where is Scott Robertson going to go? Scott Robertson was the guy who didn't quite get the job as next All Blacks coach. So it's expected he's now going to go abroad. Wouldn't Bruce Craig, the money bags at Bath, isn't that where he should go? Shouldn't he go straight out to New Zealand and say, Scott, you know, we employed the last Crusaders head coach and it didn't work, but we're going to have a go with you as well.
That's a very fair point. And we're just in the background now of the All Blacks basically choosing between two and ignoring Scott Robertson, who was massively, by 78%, the popular choice.
You wrote about this at the weekend, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
In a very intelligent way.
Thank you very much.
Well,
it was ghosted. And Scott Robertson has won three super trophies. Well, if you won three on the trot and now you're miffed because someone else is coming above you, maybe you will be available. So who's going to be the person to tempt them? That's what you're asking.
I think it's pretty obvious that I'm not convinced by Stuart Hooper before he was appointed, since he was appointed, and what he's done in his time at appointment at Bath. But it is early into it, so you do actually need to give the bloke some sort of chance. So I'm not advocating Howley right now, but if Bath have a really bad season, and that is a possibility, even with some very fine players coming back, then Bruce Craig will be thinking again, and that's why Howley came up. And on the subject of Robertson, you know, I think at Bath, they got hold of Blackadder and they thought, get a big name from New Zealand. And there's a sort of logic to that, but that didn't work. And I think you'll find that Craig still fancied another big name. And the club decided that the better idea was to promote from within. And it's a question of Bruce Craig thinking, right, to the sort of rugby board at the club, I gave you a chance, you got it wrong. Scott Robertson, he could say he won three super titles. I mean, the thing is with
so you're suggesting that Bruce Craig was persuaded to appoint Hooper by the board. I thought Bruce Craig made every decision.
I would say that Bruce Craig did not make the decision other than the final ticking for Stuart Hooper.
I think
Bath felt they had to go within. I thought there was a movement, and the atmosphere around the West Country town at the time wanted it, and I think Hooper was identified as the one most likely. My view was it was a case of...
Can I just go to Alex? Scott Robertson, really a brilliant character, like surfing, really out there, worldly, a bit like the average New Zealander isn't.
I like surfing.
Okay.
I don't know how that's got to do with it.
Maybe cricket named the places who wouldn't want to have him.
Yeah.
Because you've probably got the whole French First Division, probably Leicester. You've got the four Welsh clubs who probably like him. You can almost name his price. And what a challenging and exciting thing it would be.
Where do you think he'd go? Stade Francais?
Could go to Stade. I just wonder. I was really interested. I thought he'd get the All Blacks job. I thought they had, given the way the World Cup went for them and what they... how they are underachieved, I thought they'd move away from that sort of the dynasty that started with Graham Henry back in 2004. But they've only given Foster a two-year deal, which immediately puts him on trial.
Yeah,
you know, he's got to deliver with a squad that doesn't have it doesn't have its captain anymore. But Brodie Retallick is on sabbatical, doesn't have Kieran Reid, doesn't have Ben Smith. He's got to build a leadership group in 2 years and maintain the standards that New Zealand expect in order to be reappointed for the World Cup.
But what about...
I just wonder whether Scott Robertson might sit and wait.
The New Zealand Rugby Union, incidentally, all the players, the people like Gatland and Rennie and all the other guys who'd taken jobs elsewhere weren't available. They claimed in their official release they'd spoken to 29 coaches. Well, the 29 who were available, they must have been down to the assistant groundsman.
They invited all those coaches to apply.
Right.
And the front runners, or some of the leading candidates, didn't want it. And they ended up only interviewing Ian Foster and Scott Robertson, and they gave it to Foster, but only on a two-year deal.
Okay.
And I wouldn't, you know, which brings us to a really interesting point in 2 years' time when, as it stands, Eddie Jones is out of contract, Warren Gatland will have done the Lions, and Ian Foster's out of contract.
Blimey,
we're going ahead now. We're really looking forward.
But anyway, I wouldn't be surprised if he stays in New Zealand and waits it out for 2 years to see.
Let's hope that nothing tragic happens to the All Black results either, and that they keep they keep the hacker going long into the future. We're just going to discuss now the Tyrrells Premier 15s. We had an absolutely monumental weekend, and arguably, I think, the greatest match the Tyrrells Premiership has ever seen in its third year. It was between Harlequins and Saracens. Quins were top of the table by a point, having won 8 games, all with a bonus point. Playing Saracens, the reigning champions, it really was the massive stuff. And those of us who were at the Saracens men's game against Munster kept on hearing what were, for Saracens, really, really worrying stories. They were down 24-0. Marley Packer, the Saracens and England flanker. At that stage, 24-0 down, Marley. How are you feeling?
A bit blown away, to be honest. We knew Harlequins would come out the blocks at us, but we thought we'd come out the blocks as well, which we didn't. So, half-time, our coach, Alex Osterbury, came in, just gave us a couple of home truths, said what needed to be said, and we had a couple of other discussions within that. But the fact was, the first half, we just couldn't get hold of the ball. And then when we did get hold of it, we didn't look after it. Just before half time, we actually did score a try. So we went in 24-7 at half time, last play of that half. We just knew we needed to keep that tempo. Saracens are really good at, when we've got a high tempo game, we keep going forward. That's what we went out and did in that second half. And I think the belief within the squad to just keep going, the fence at the end of the game, was just fantastic from the whole squad.
Because I mean, that's another thing that made it a fantastic game. When you did come back with this incredible comeback, you then had to defend on your own line for the last few minutes. So at one stage, you looked like it might swing back the other way.
Yeah, it felt like unbelievable scenes. Really, I think we just got up in front of Harlequins. Then we scored a try quite quickly afterwards, and then I think there was probably about 4 or 5 minutes left of the game, and Harlequins restarted. Unfortunately, there was a knock-on, but a player offside that picked it up. So they got the penalty, they kicked for touch, they drive in line out. Then we managed to obviously stop them going over the line. And the defence, like our line speed was just brilliant, to be fair. And then unfortunately, about a minute before the end of the game, we seen a yellow card for an infringement in defence, which then we had to bring on our original hooker, Yanni. We scrummed down. I knew at that time, because I'd asked the referee how long we got left, and he was like, this will be last play. And they just picked and picked. So we just knew that if they come over the line, we just have to hold it up. Mm-hmm. We held it up, then that'd be the end of the game. The final whistle, when it went, it was just relief, amazement, and just the belief within the squad was just there. And it was quite magical at that point.
That's a brilliant description of it. Also, I understand that one of the Saracens flankers scored a hat-trick. Was that correct?
Yeah, that's me.
I know it was. Molly, that now puts you back in the kind of driving seat. But what's your impression of the tournament as a whole, finally? Because suddenly there always seemed to be a real core of decent players around the England team. But now this tournament is throwing up player after player, is it not?
Yeah, I think so. And I think you can see that. Like I was talking about Mackenzie then from Canada. You've got internationals coming from Italy, Ireland, all over the place, wanting to play in the TP15s. And I just think that shows that the investment that the RFU have put in, obviously the league sponsor Tyrrells, just how good that's been for the women's game. And we're now into our third year at being the Tyrrells Premiership. And I think it's a fantastic case of showcase of women's rugby.
Arguably the greatest Tyrrells Premiership game ever played. Well played to Saracens, but also well played to Harlequins as well. Marley Packer, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Marley Packer, one of the comeback queens at the Stoop on the weekend. What a game. Right, the three August men in front of me, so-called because when you ask them for an idea, it's August before they come back. We're going to go for our God or Goddess of the Week, an absolutely massively coveted title. Stuart, do you want to give us your first god or goddess of the week?
I don't differentiate between god and goddess. It's that era we live in now. So god actually could be female as well.
Right, okay.
So as long as you know that, Steve.
Yeah.
I like someone
But if it's a goddess, would that be female?
It could be male as well,
male,
yes.
Male goddess, okay.
So my goddess of the week is John Cooney. I like it when you say something on the ruck and a couple of days later, this person franks what you said and make you look as if you know what you're doing.
That's never happened to me.
Last week, I said Cooney must start instead of Conor Murray. And against Harlequins on Friday night, he produced his best performance in a sequence of magnificent performances. If you cancelled or you froze this year's Heineken Cup now, everybody on the panel would have to make him the player of the tournament. And more importantly, Andy Farrell has to make him the Ireland number nine. He is in magical form. He is my goddess stroke god of the week.
OK, thank you very much for that modest presentation, Bunsy.
God, that's hard to
so
follow,
isn't
it?
The goddess of the week is Mrs. Cooney.
Yeah, my goddess of the week is a Gloucester player, actually.
Right.
I know we've been panning Gloucester on this podcast, but Louis Rhys Zammit. I don't know if I pronounced his name right.
Yes, you did.
He's the new young sensation at Gloucester this season. He's lightning fast. He's only about 15 years old, and he I'm just selecting him for one extraordinary piece of skill at the weekend. He was released down the right wing. He was going hell for leather. He beat 73 people, but finally he was being caught. And in the process of being bundled into touch, behind his back with his right hand, he flicked an offload inside, which produced a try. It was a dream moment. And he is 18, actually, and maybe that's one of those things about youth that they'll do stuff because that's just because they like doing it. So more of that, please. Great moment.
It's a very good one.
So last night I watched Sports Personality of the Year, and I'm going to slightly cheat, if you allow me, and just name Alan Wynne-Jones and Doddy Weir, who both, I thought, represented themselves, first of all. Secondly, rugby brilliantly on a stage where I think they got 9 million viewers at one point, and it's a general sports audience, it's not a rugby audience. And Alan Wynne was never going to win that award, but I just thought he was brilliant up on stage with what he said. And Doddy Weir's story was told to more people than perhaps knew it already. So I'm going to give it my joint award to two outstanding lock forwards.
I thought that was a good suggestion.
It's very good. Usually we insist you come up with a winner, but far be it from any of us to ask you to choose between those two great men. So that's very good. Mine is a goddess, and it would be Marley Packer, not just because I spoke to her this morning, and I'm scared that if I meet her in the high street, she might object. But Marley, I could not get her to admit for one second that when they were 86-0 down at half-time, that they ever thought of defeat. Sorry, 24-7 down at half-time, that they ever thought of losing the game. Marley is a force of nature. She's an absolutely tremendous player. She used to be a plumber and really had to work hard to make the rugby pay for her. And if ever anyone deserved professionalism, and if ever anyone deserved the glory of a hat-trick, I think it was Marley on Saturday at that incredible game. So Marley's my goddess of the week, and I have to say we got five great choices there. Well, we've named some goddesses here. Of some of them of slightly indeterminate sex, according to Barnsley. Thank you for listening to The Ruck this week. We'll be back next week before Christmas, at which Lawrence has graciously consented not to be here again. Thanks for listening.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on. Settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books. Contacts. Calendar. Double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.